Hey guys, just want to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
Jonestown was supposed to be a paradise in the South American jungle. It was anything but.
The saddest part about this tragedy is that good, decent people died who were well-intentioned.
The story begins in America during the 1970s when Jim Jones created a religious movement called People's Temple. The charismatic minister fought for civil rights and had a multiracial family.
It was the original Rainbow Family.
Including his adopted son, Jim Jones Jr.
Did his message at the time resonate with you?
Yes, yes, yes. No isms, no sexism, racism.
But in the new book, The Road to Jonestown, author Jeff Gwynn details how Jones started to change.
He's convinced himself that he is some sort of superhuman martyr.
Jones persuaded nearly 1,000 followers to move to a remote jungle in Guyana.
The concept was to build a new world.
A socialist utopia.
Jonestown was described as this paradise, and it was not.
Former member Leslie Wagner Wilson says followers were overworked and underfed.
And then as time wore on, I realized that there was no future in Jonestown. Jim became increasingly paranoid.
Jones was obsessed with revolutionary suicide. He felt followers should be prepared to die for their cause, even having them drink fruit punch he claimed was poison.
Only after most of the people drank the liquid did he tell them, it's not poison, I was just testing you.
Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast with Ryan, Larry, Springhill, Josh, and the Luma Mommy herself, Miss April. And on today's episode, we end our Jonestown episode with part two. Dead 2020 here with the skeptic, the mom, and the beard. We're going to talk more about our, our dude, Mr. Jim Jones. And I'm looking at a wiener dog eating toilet paper. So I know.
Here's a sentence I didn't expect today.
So I know things are interesting nowadays.
Let's just say you don't have to wipe after he poops.
No.
Right. Because you can't wipe. Because all the toilet paper's in the fucking wiener dog's belly.
Yep.
By the way, April, those squash are looking pretty thick.
Thank you. I got them for a friend
Damn,
of mine.
Damn, girl, you thick.
Squash.
Anyway.
Throw them on the grill. That sounds good.
Yeah, I got some zucchinis.
Too. What's a good recipe you can do with squash?
Well.
Parmesan, a little olive oil, and bake it in the oven for 15, 20 minutes.
Or if you're feeling exciting and want to make zucchini fries, cut those puppies up into like triangle fry shapes and bread them with panko breadcrumbs and a little bit of Parmesan.
Yeah.
You know, it's as good as you slice them up, throw them in a pan with some olive oil, some sea salt, and then you throw some chopped up sausage into it and bake it.
Mm.
Yum.
went star, didn't get to the episode. I didn't need to hear about squash. I don't cook. Mom makes all my food.
Mom, give me some tenders.
There's two of us here.
Thank you, brother.
That's right. Shut up, Kyle.
I'm on the bottom bunk. You're at the top bunk.
Jonestown Part 2. We're just going to get right into it.
Ooh. Right.
Jim Jones had started building Jonestown, formerly known as the People's Temple Agricultural Project, several years before the New West article was published. It was promoted as a means to create both a socialist paradise and a sanctuary from the media scrutiny in San Francisco, which we talked about in the last episode. This whole thing was fodder for Jim. Jim used it basically to make an enemy. And how do you make yourself seem more important when you're being attacked? So Jones purported to establish it as this community as a model communist community, adding that the temple compromised the purest communists there are. He did not, however, permit members to leave Jonestown. Religious scholar Mary McCormick Maga argues that Jones' authority decreased after he moved to the isolated commune because he was not needed for recruitment and he could not hide his drug addiction, which is why he wore sunglasses all the time. Kind of a way to cover up the fact that his eyes were fucking... were just these big pink bowls with like his pupils of like Fruit Loops in the bottom. It was amphetamines.
Oh,
to be fair, which is
we can snort those too.
I guess, yeah, totally. You know, get creative with it.
I mean,
yeah. It's Saturday. Let's snort my amphetamines. I'm Jim Jones. Nobody else but me. I'm the father. Fuck you.
Just saying.
So. Anyway, so he wasn't needed for recruitment and he could not hide his drug addiction from rank and file members, which was the personal crew that he had. They were close. In spite of the allegations prior to Jones' departure, he was still respected by some for setting up a racially mixed church, which helped the disadvantaged. 68% of Jonestown residents were black, which Wow. You can see when you watch a lot of the archive footage. Mm-hmm. Jones began to propagate his belief in what he termed translation once they were in Jonestown, where he and his followers would all die together and move to another planet and live blissfully. Now, I know I said in the last episode that technically he said that he didn't believe in God, and also he changed God to himself very slowly and methodically because he knew how he was going to make these people basically follow his every move. Mm-hmm. But he also trained them pretty early on. He would have these mock poison parties, basically, where he's like, all right, y'all, this is it. We're going down with the ship. Everybody drink the poison. Oh, shit. I was just messing. But you pass the test. So Jones did have children, which we brought up in the last episode. Jones claimed he was the biological father of child John Victor Stowen, though the birth certificate listed temple attorney Timothy Stowen and his wife Grace. So because a lot of times he was like, who's that bad bitch over there? And Tim's like,
it's my wife.
it's my wife. So Cuck was kind of born during this time.
Right.
Fair enough.
And he'd be like, Jimmy gonna put it in. Jimmy gonna make it squirt. Jimmy gonna make it happen. Oh God. I don't believe in condoms. Too much squirt. All right.
Oh, hit the painting above my head.
Be the Patreon! So, the temple repeatedly claimed that Jones fathered the child in 1971 when Stone had requested that Jones have sex with Grace to keep her from defecting. Grace left the temple in 76 and began divorce proceedings the following year. Jones ordered Tim to take the boy to Guyana, which is where Jonestown was, in February 77 in order to avoid a custody dispute with Grace. After Tim himself defected in June of 77, the temple kept John Stone
in Jonestown. He also fathered Jim John Chemo with Temple member Carolyn Louise Moore Layton. In the autumn of 1977, Tim Stone and others who had left the Temple formed a, quote, concerned relatives group. Now, this is kind of what brought this whole thing down. This is why you have Ryan, Senator Ryan, going out there, basically, because there were people who are just like, these people are being treated like shit, and they're malnourished, and we're worried because they're not getting our letters, and their letters aren't getting sent to us. So Stone traveled to Washington, D.C. in January of 78 to visit with State Department officials and members of Congress, and he wrote a white paper detailing his grievances against Jones and the Temple. His efforts aroused the curiosity of California Congressman Leo Ryan. Here steps kind of semi the hero / catalyst to this whole story, who wrote a letter on Stone's behalf to Guyanese Prime Minister Forbes Burnham. The concerned relatives, not of the Forbes magazine, just... The concerned relatives also began a legal battle with the Temple over the custody of Stone's son, John. Most of Jones' political allies broke ties after his departure, though some did not. Willie Brown spoke out against enemies who, at a rally that was attended by Harvey Milk, see the movie Milk, and Assemblyman Art Agnos, on February 19th, 1978, Milk wrote a letter to President Jimmy Carter defending Jones as a, quote, man of the highest character.
Oh.
So there are differentiating opinions at this time.
Yeah.
Even though there were a lot of people like, wait, what's going on here?
Which is fishy. You have people that are so strongly against, and so many they're strongly for them. You don't really see any gray area here.
Mm-hmm. You don't.
Either you buy the bullshit or you see through the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he claimed, Jones, that escaped Temple members were trying to damage Reverend Jones' reputation. This is from Milk. With apparent bold-faced lies. Now, Moscone's office issued a press release saying Jones had broken no laws in 1977. On April 11th, 1978, the concerned relatives distributed a pocket of documents, letters, and affidavits to the People's Temple members of the press, People's Temple, also members of the press, and members of Congress, which they titled, quote, an accusation of human rights violations by Reverend James Warren Jones. In June of 1978, escaped Temple member Deborah Layton provided the group with a further affidavit detailing crimes by the Temple and substandard living conditions in Jonestown. Jones was facing increasing scrutiny in the summer of 78 when he hired JFK assassination conspiracy theorist Mark Lane and Donald Freed to help make the case of a grand conspiracy against the Temple by U.S. intelligence agencies.
Which I guess, sorry.
Well, it's funny to me because see the JFK episodes, always great. It's funny to me because the best thing he had to do at that time was hire the then current Alex Jones to make a case for him. So it's like, hey man, and like the frogs are gay. Please help us out. So to help make the case a grand conspiracy against the Temple by U.S. intelligence agencies, which is what his core idea was, Jones told Lane that he wanted to pull an Eldridge Cleaver, referring to a fugitive member of the Black Panthers who was able to return to the U.S. after repairing his reputation. So he wanted to leave, come back after people forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which they're not going to.
Nope.
The congregation is way too big.
Mm-hmm.
The even the Exodus idea of them all moving to this country, even though they're still U.S. citizens, is kind of like, nobody's going to forget that.
Right.
It's like
remember everybody, that one time that church moved to a different country, like,
yeah. Or just the idea of like everybody slowly just being like, Guantanamo Bay. Yeah. I heard they have great,
nachos, jerk
chicken or paninis, you know, it's like, oh wait, no, there's a detention center there with a lot of prisoners who can't go back to their countries because their countries will kill them.
Favorite panini.
Oh, good God. I would kill for a ham and Swiss panini.
Ooh, that's strong.
Men Suisse.
Cuban.
Ooh, yep.
Love a good Cuban. That
I'm also going to second Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, here.
Turkey and provolone.
Oh, all of them sound good.
Dear Patreon.
Good mustard and
pickle. Gotta put pickle on it.
Oh yeah. You got a nice pickle slice. Mm. Chips. Mm-hmm.
In November of 1978, Congressman Leo Ryan led a fact-finding mission to Jonestown to investigate allegations of human rights abuses. His delegation included relatives of Temple... I'm trying to give you a signal here, buddy. Included relatives of Temple members on NBC, an NBC camera crew and reporters for various newspapers. The group arrived in the Guyanese capital of Georgetown on November 15th. 2 days later, they traveled by airplane to Port Kaituma, then were transported to the Jonestown encampment in a limousine. Jones hosted a reception for the delegation, which, by the way, I mean, they went all out that night. Mm-hmm. They made, like, big old plates of chicken dinner type stuff. And, like, the whole time they were like, you guys like Kool-Aid and bad soup that's not heated? But then this night they were literally like, let's just get a lot of food in there.
I actually knocked something over on my soundboard here.
The delegation, this group, left hurriedly the afternoon of November 18th after Temple member Don Sly attacked Ryan with a knife, which he did. He came up to him and it was like, time to die, motherfucker, and started sobbing. Can you imagine somebody trying to kill you and they start sobbing?
I can't imagine that at all. Who does that? That's crazy.
Well, and a large part of... because it wasn't like he just did it for no reason.
No, he was told to.
The Senator Ryan was asking people, like, legitimately, are you happy? Do you want to be here?
Well, he's poking around.
There's audio of Ryan saying, like, I came here to investigate, and from what I see, everybody here is happier than I ever could have imagined, and the outcry of the people is so loud, it's muffling. But you want to know the truth? I think the reason they're so happy is because they were told they were basically going to die or this whole operation was going to fall apart. And then when that guy came there and then he basically made it seem like everybody passed the test, it became darker, or not darker. It became more hopeful suddenly for them. Like, we're going to live. So what you hear is people saying, we get to live, basically, with their cheers.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. And you can hear it. And not only that, but soon after that, he was passed a note. At least I think it was the cameraman who got it. And it was from one of the people who wanted to know that I need to get out of here.
Wow.
But much like Nazi Germany and the young Germans who would see note passing between Jewish people, a little boy saw the note being passed, picked it up and yelled, he's passing a note.
Oh,
and it was the same type of scenario because Jones found out real quick that people were trying to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they had anticipated maybe we're going to lose 20 after this. Maybe more. They didn't lose that many. Hardly any at all. But I think Jones made up his mind. This was going to be the last test or the last white knight. So Ryan and his delegation managed to take along 15 Temple members who had expressed a wish to leave. And Jones made no attempt to prevent their departure at that time. And there's an audio clip the next day where he talks to Jim Jones, Ryan, Senator Ryan does, basically explaining, like, these people said they want to leave. And Jones is just like, people lie, friend, like on all kinds of amphetamines, big old sunglasses on. There's chaos in the back because you can tell everybody's worried. But this is the day of what we're about to talk about. This is the day, 18 November, of which... I mean, this is definitively one of the most chaotic and insane moments in history. Now we're going to talk about the Port Kaitamuda, I'm sorry, Kaituma airstrip. As members of the delegation boarded two planes at the airstrip, Jones' armed guards called the Red Brigade arrived on a tractor and trailer and began shooting at them. The gunmen killed Senator Ryan and four others near Guyana Airways Twin Otter aircraft. At the same time, one of the supposed defectors, Larry Layton, drew a weapon and began firing on members of the party who had already boarded a small Cessna. An NBC cameraman was able to capture footage, which you can see and we will post, of the first few seconds of the shooting at the Otter. The five killed at the airstrip were Senator Ryan, NBC reporter Don Harris, NBC cameraman Bob Brown, San Francisco Examiner photographer Greg Robinson, and Temple member Patricia Parks.
Sounds like they had a certain group of people picked out to be shot to death.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And one person just happened to be in the way.
Indeed. Surviving that attack were future Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who you should watch this video again. There's so much content about this. And her, he wrote a book about it called Surviving Jonestown. And honestly,
it'd be a good book.
It is phenomenal. And it wouldn't necessarily be all about Jonestown being the worst day of her life because her husband died after that. Mm. And it talks about the struggles because of the PTSD caused from that. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal.
Kidding. Yeah.
At the time, Orion staff member Richard Dwyer, another person who survived, deputy chief of mission from the U.S. Embassy at Georgetown, Bob Flick, and NBC producer Steve Sung, and NBC sound engineer Tim Reiterman, a San Francisco Examiner reporter Ron Javers, a San Francisco Chronicle reporter Charles Cross, a Washington Post reporter, several defecting Temple members. And after the break, after Josh breaks down this next part, I'm going to talk about one such surviving member's account, because I think that it really surmises what happened then and there. But Josh, it's time for you to... No. Okay, so this is your part now. So do you want to play the clip here?
Okay.
Okay.
So this is Jim Jones addressing the congregation after everyone has left.
How very much I've loved you. How very much I've tried my best to give you a good life. But in spite of all of that I've tried, a handful of our people, with their lives, have made our life impossible. There's no way to detach ourselves from what's happened today. Not only we're in a compound situation, not only are there those who have left and committed the betrayal of the century, some have stolen children from others and they're in pursuit right now to kill them because they stole their children. And we are sitting here waiting on a powder keg. I don't think this is what we want to do with our babies. I don't think that's what we had in mind to do with our babies. It was said by the greatest of prophets from time immemorial, no man takes my life from me, I lay my life down. So to sit here and wait for the catastrophe that's going to happen on that airplane, it's going to be a catastrophe. Almost happened here. Almost happened. The congressman was nearly killed here. But you can't steal people's children. You can't take off with people's children without expecting a violent reaction. And that's not so unfamiliar to us either. Even if we were Judeo-Christian, if we weren't communists, the world, the kingdom, suffereth violence, and the violence shall take it by force. If we can't live in peace, then let's die in peace.
Okay. So, yep, that was Jim addressing the congregation, but I do want to backtrack just a tiny, tiny little bit here, because it is pertinent. Like Ryan said, Senator Ryan was there, and before he...
No relation.
Before he left, he did talk to Jim Jones, and the congressman said that he would issue a report that would describe Jonestown, quote, in basically good terms.
It's weird that he was shot and killed.
It's the way Jim processes that statement. Mm-hmm. Brian stated that none of the 60 relatives he had targeted for interviews wanted to leave. The 14 defectors constituted a very small portion of Jonestown's residents, that any sense of imprisonment that the defectors had was likely because of peer pressure and a lack of physical transportation. And even if 200 of the 900 wanted to leave, he'd still say, quote, "I'd still say you have a beautiful place here," quote, because the grounds themselves, the people, they took care of this land.
Right.
It wasn't like they were living in.
They gussied it up for the delegation. They went out above and beyond to make it look more presentable then. But yes.
But what I mean is not like they had pillows and blankets in the dirt.
No. They didn't. They had little hovels and places to rest. But I'm saying all the video footage we have is of when the delegation goes there. Now we have audio recordings, which you can find online, and we can post that link. But the visuals you see are to be presentable for other people to see.
Yeah.
The audio tapes tell another story, though, and so do the survivors.
Sure. Now, despite Ryan's report, Jones responded to him with, quote, "I have failed."
Mm.
Despite being reassured that Ryan would be making a positive report, Jones maintained that all is lost and decided that it was time to enact what he called revolutionary suicide. The idea of that being, you can go down in history saying you were that you chose your own way to go, and it is your commitment to refuse capitalism and in support of socialism. Mm.
Socialism has made it this way.
I'll take capitalism.
That's true.
Me thanks, too. Marilyn. Now, these are all this from here on out. This is after the Red Brigade has left to go kill the congressman. This is what's happening in Jonestown. Marceline Jones, who is, of course, Jim's wife, put out a broadcast on the public address system stating that everything was all right, asking residents, hey, come back to your homes. It's all good. Go home. Play with your yo-yos, kids.
That's dangerous.
You could take it out.
I've hit myself with a yo-yo before.
Oh. To do to the moon and like, oh,
walk yeah, the dogs.
Yep. Good way to lose a tooth.
Yeah.
He's so true. Of course, there was a little bit of some silly stuff happening on the side while they were making this broadcast to come home. Aides were preparing a large metal tub with grape flavor aid, poisoned with Valium, chloral hydrate, cyanide, and Phenergan.
Yes, Phenergan, my favorite ingredient. That's how I make my pork loins.
Phenergan?
Let me see it.
Fennel?
One part oregano leaves, three parts mustache.
It's PHE.
Mm-hmm. Sprinkling of red wine.
Yep.
God, what happened
to my vinegar.
You know what? We're going to go with Phenergan.
Phenergan.
I like Phenergan.
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 So if you've been doing Jonestown research for years and you've come to our podcast, late breaking news here for you.
It's called Phenergan.
Yep.
Because Josh can't pronounce medical shit.
It's okay.
You're lucky you got cyanide.
True.
About 30 minutes after Marceline Jones' announcement, however, Jim made his own announcement, calling all members immediately to the pavilion where he would conduct his final sermon. Now, this sermon would be called...
Fruit fly. I was trying to wave away.
You found maybe you
hurry
farted
the fuck
and it was
up with this poison.
That would have been more like this.
Oh yeah, okay, fair enough.
The sermon itself.
Oh, my bouquet.
Deathy. Yes. Burn again.
It's a dash of dingleberry. Burn again to all over your
food. Yes. You can
burn again.
All right, where's the t-shirts, guys?
ZZ Ben VV and Fernigan.
Fernigan.
Ooh, I just Fernigan in my pants. I want to say right now that this sermon that he gave, you can find the entire thing on YouTube. Actually, what you heard before I started was the beginning couple minutes of the 44-minute
good
recording Lord. That you can find.
But you don't want to listen to the whole thing.
It's called the Death Tape.
Jonestown Death Tape
boring.
Is one of I get it, Homer, but this would literally make that us all want to die.
Boring.
If you like to listen to little kids choking to death and dying while their parents kill themselves soon after.
This is the entire process of people drinking poison.
People die?
Yes.
You can hear the kids crying and saying, like, I don't feel good.
Yeah, and like, I don't want to read that.
Yeah, it's fucked.
No.
Why?
Again, which is why we pick our clips well.
That just means tonight Larry's going to go underneath a blanket and listen to this on his iPad.
Oh,
with,
man.
With a Cure vinyl playing in the back.
Myself for a week.
Yeah, I really like Pornography by The Cure, but my favorite's the Jonestown Death Tape under a maple tree.
Goth, all the goths.
Yeah, I've just been a goth by Larry.
And they drink grape-flavored Flavor-Aid as
with some Flanagan in it.
A little extra dash of Flanagan.
Ooh.
That sounds like something delivered on Futurama.
It does.
Flanagan, or whatever you said.
Flanagan.
What is it? Flanagan?
Fernigan?
Fernigan.
Who knows? We're all just talking like the Swedish Chef at this
network
point.
Show. It's Fernigan and his friends.
It's an alien. A purple alien named Fernigan. Oh, anyways, in the sermon
and the Fernigern with the Hergigern and Jim's Jernigan.
I like my Fernigan. This is a sermon in. In the sermon, Jones used fear to scare the residents into thinking that the government was coming to take them and their children away.
And at this point, they'd done so many white knights, they were prepared for this, but then also.
I mean,
I didn't quite think it was going to be real.
Well, yeah, they've already been fooled a few times.
Right.
Quote, one of those people on that plane is going to shoot the pilot. I know that. I didn't plan it, but I know it's going to happen. They're going to shoot that pilot, and down comes the plane into the jungle. And we had better not have any of our children left when it's over, because they'll parachute in here on us. Now, after the Red Brigade had shot up the congressman in that plane, they returned.
Not congressman, a senator. Which holds a little more, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, senator. Senator Ryan.
The guy didn't go to senator school to be called congressman.
I'm going to have a senator knocking on my door. You motherfucker. Right?
Yeah, I might be president, but I really like to be called chief.
Call me.
Chief Buckaroo.
I like to be called dear leader.
We know you do.
When the Red Brigade members came back to Jonestown after Ryan's murder, Jones confirmed that, quote, and this is what I have as the quote, the congressman's dead.
Which you
quote.
Hear on the audio tape.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So he's the one who made the call.
Yep. And then when he
I mean, not that I'm surprised.
When he says that, you actually hear applause.
Well, yeah.
That's fucked up.
No dissent is heard on the death tape. By this point, armed guards had taken up positions surrounding the pavilion area, ensuring that nobody could run away from their soon-to-be fate.
Wow.
So they get out their barrel of fun juice.
It's a trash can.
Trash can.
Yeah, Jim! Yeah, let's get fucked woo, up! Woo, woo,
woo. Time to drink poison!
Some awfully funny taste in jungle juice.
The first to take the poison were Roletta Paul and her one-year-old infant.
Oh, wow. That got dark in a hurry.
A syringe without a needle was fitted, was used to squirt poison into the infant's mouth.
I took my headphones so I wouldn't have to hear it and heard it anyway. And then
after which, Paul squirted another syringe into her own mouth while... After adults saw the poison begin to take effect, they showed a reluctance to die. The children were the first to die. The concoction itself did not take long to have its desired effects. Children would die within 5 minutes, and the adults it generally took about half an hour.
By the way,
infants was under 5 minutes.
Mr. Muggs was the first person, actually, the first person to die being the ape mascot.
They fucking killed the ape.
They were in the jungle. The chimpanzee. They could just fucking let him go.
Not Mr. Muggs.
Hey, if he was me,
for that life.
If it was me, I'm sure I would have.
The mug life.
He just grabs a suitcase. Ook, ook, I'm out. I won't tell anyone. Ook, 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 ook. I'll make friends with Jurassic. Ook, ook, I'm out.
Would they give him a poison? Would they give him a banana flavored flavor?
Squirt a little bit into a Chiquita.
God.
Oh, God. With the screams of pain and watched loved ones die, Jones Jesus. Himself could be heard saying, quote, die with a degree of dignity. Lay down your life with dignity. Don't lay down with your tears in agony. I tell you, I don't care how many screams you hear. I don't care how many anguish cries. Death is a million times preferable to 10 more days of this life.
And during this, there's even a point in the tape where Marceline is hyperventilating and crying her eyes out because mm-hmm. she can't believe her husband's actually doing this. And he's just like, mother, 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 calm down. Mother, mother, this must happen.
That's right.
And because Pence he called himself father or dad, mm-hmm. he was just like, mother, calm yourself.
The vice president calls his wife mother.
Well, so did a 80s respected...
Yeah, I did too.
True. I loved you in the...
Reagan, if you didn't understand this accent, I'm doing... sounds a little like Johnny Carson.
I loved you in the Land of Confusion video, sir. Hey, Josh.
That's all right. Quote, if you knew what was ahead of you... If you knew what was ahead of you, you'd be glad to be stepping over tonight.
Hey, I'm Steve-O. I'm drinking flavoring.
I'm in Guyana. Now, here's one point. Ryan and I were kind of sharing notes with each other, and here's one point of contention that I could not find anything concrete, but Ryan did. Mm-hmm. This is because while everybody else were laying down their lives drinking this Flavor Aid, Jones himself was found dead of a gunshot wound.
Right. 900.
He saw everybody healing. I ain't going out that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, 908.
Fuck that.
908 die there, specifically in that group. Mm-hmm. It's over 900. We'll at least say that.
Yeah.
The inner circle leaves. They make sure all the animals are dead, which... The dogs, the cats, you know, Mr. Muggs, probably the horses. Mm-hmm. Inner Circle gets together and says, you know, we did our best, slowly drinks the poison. And lastly is Jones. Everybody's dead. Now, I heard in a doc that he was actually shot by one of the Inner Circle.
The nurse.
One of the nurse. Mm-hmm. Got in the back of the head.
A prescription for one bullet to the back of the head. Now,
the only reason that I'm speculating that I think this might be true is because one of the survivors who was out in the woods running around said they heard the initial gunshot, okay, which is probably Jones, mm-hmm. and then an hour later, another gunshot, which could have been that other, the nurse that killed herself finally mm-hmm. after she made sure that everybody in the camp was dead, which...
That's to her me, job.
That is literally, I get chills thinking about this, but thinking about that person walking around that, what used to be the so-called heaven
with all those
after killing the father,
children.
I mean, look, this will be the last, this will be one of the most decrepit picture sets I post on Instagram. They're very famous. They've been around for a long time, but. The look of the camp from above, from like a helicopter shot after mm-hmm. they'd all killed themselves, is one of the most horrifying cult situations.
Just bodies literally everywhere. Fuck this
shit. And this is episode 200. Fuck this
shit. Those aerial photos look like the ground after Woodstock, except for instead of trash, it's just bodies.
Yeah.
And every time I think about it, as far as that scenario of that woman shooting herself after the whole thing as the sun's going down, there's nothing more horrific mm-hmm. I could imagine. And I don't know why this isn't a movie yet.
Fuck this shit!
Who would want to tackle it?
Yeah.
Hasn't it been done?
We'll talk about that in the second segment.
But, so now we have this whole encampment full of dead bodies. What happens? Yes. That was Mr. Bubbles.
Bodies hit the floor.
Mr. Muggs.
Mr. Muggs. Bubbles Muggs.
Mr. Flernigan.
Mr. Flernigan. No, that was the chicken.
Look, Mr. Bubbles was his equal but loving monkey partner.
Okay. I mean...
It wasn't Bubbles Michael Jackson's monkey? Jackson.
Yeah, monkey.
Yeah, he was probably a little too young now I say that.
Now...
My great-grandfather was Mr. Muggs.
A lot of what we know about the airport incident comes from Richard Dwyer, whom in 1990 was interviewed, Dwyer, who was a deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Guyana. And so a lot of what I have here is because of his accounts. The most difficult decision that the ambassador had to make at the time was what to do with the bodies at Jonestown. You have 900 plus people.
Mm-hmm.
The Guyanese government had come to him with the request that the bodies be taken back to the United States. John Burke was correctly went back to Washington asking for instructions on how to do it. They could have been buried there, but that would also lead to more problems. On Sunday evening, just...
I'm sorry. All I can think of is some guy, like, having this great... Like, let's just get one of our like, air buses, and we'll strap them all in to the seats, Weekend at Bernie's style, and fly them back just home. Like,
put a little bungee cord on them. There's just 908 people just flopping in the wind.
I know some West Siders that have, like, half a pickup truck back that they... with a trailer hitch.
Hey,
they'd come and pick that up.
Look, y'all. We're making this harder than it needs to be. Strap them up. Put a little duct tape around their midsection. Maybe they'll bounce around, but they'll scare them damn monkeys away.
Ooh, I tell you what, we get that half pickup truck trailer hitched up to the back. I tell you what, take that down there to the duct. You might be, you know, that them teeth, they might have some gold, and we can get a little money for it.
You don't say that out loud.
I said, I might get some gold.
There's just the one flight attendant that has to do her, like, here are the windows. It's just a bunch of dead people.
In case of an
all wearing sunglasses. In case of emergencies.
Yeah, fuck it. Oh, boy. There's the emergency. What do you care? You're
just
already dead.
Go about the ocean. Just open the doors.
I'll just use you as a flotation device.
Oh, God. No. Just
peanuts? 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 Nothing? Okay.
We're not making any sales
Captain,
tonight.
I couldn't even get... I couldn't even move a ginger ale.
They hit turbulence and all the masks drop down, just swinging in front of the dead bodies.
Holy shit, that's dark.
Well, turbulence just...
Right.
Nothing in the overhead bin, so those are clear.
No, the more bodies are in there.
Keep the bodies in there? How do you shove a...
Captain, I look in the back and they're
charging $50 for every extra body. Because it's fucking Delta and they suck.
Sir, I need you to tell me if you'll be willing to escort people through the emergency exit door.
Will you answer me? I can't. I'm trying to get the body of the overhead bin. And I can't. Oh, geez. Oh, I'm trying to. Oh, can't get it. Can't seem to get the thing to shut.
Some old guy with his head impaled into, like, one of the just baggage racks. Somebody doing cartwheels because every time they turn, they just flop over the other side.
They're where you get the luggage. There's just dead bodies rotating around. Oh, that dead body carousel. Excuse me, that's my dead body. Excuse me. Not my dead body. The tag does not have my name on it. Oh, you know what I do? I tie a red bandana to my dead body, so when it comes down the chute, I can see the red bandana, and I know that's my dead body.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. By far the darkest joke we've ever had on this show. Thank you for listening after 200 episodes. Yes, that's right. The Jonestown dead
body carousel.
Bernie's carousel.
Believe Southwest charged me extra for that?
Oh, God.
God, when I take my dead babies everywhere, I assume
my dead babies can fit underneath the seat in front of me because they're small.
I mean, we know the guy who keeps his hat. Okay. So, we gotta move here. They got problems. It's South America. It's hot, and there's 900 bodies decomposing.
Mm-hmm.
The options were very limited. One of the major things to do was to try and identify these people. While they were able to identify so many of the victims, the tropical heat was adding to the rapid decomposition of the bodies, making it harder as time went on. And these dum-dums would mark these bodies. They were using this ink to like, okay, well, this is so-and-so and this is so-and-so. Well, the first rain came through and washed it all away because they used washable ink.
Genius.
That sounds like me.
So yeah, another waterlogged
letter of warning.
Decomposing dead bodies. So
now how soon was it after the mass suicide that they found the bodies that they knew it had happened?
I mean, it's pretty quick.
Yeah. The word's got to travel pretty quick there.
Right, well, especially after what happened at the airport.
The brigade comes back and they're still guarding the doors. Mm-hmm. I want to say one person actually walked up and said, "I don't want to die." And they just moved away and let her mm-hmm. go.
Wow.
Yeah.
There weren't.
Imagine being the guy that just drank the poison and looked back and heard that and was like, fuck.
But he gets to leave.
What? We could have. Well, you need someone to check the dead bodies in at the airport.
Right. Yeah. Naturally. God, the line must have been terrible. Mm.
The Guyanese government was completely so overwhelmed.
You got to weigh each body.
Oh.
You know, put that little,
the ink came off. Put that
little tag with the elastic band on it with your address on it.
Forest.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to inspect your dead body. Mm-hmm. Something's coming up on the x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Word. Oh, dark. With 900 bodies quickly decomposing, on one hand, there was a push to try to just bury the bodies, but they also wanted to try and get the remains sent back to the United States,
by the way,
to the families. Sadly, there were a lot of people up there without relatives or relatives who just didn't want their bodies back.
And a lot of them hated their faith. Like, I was listening to one audio tape from Jonestown, and they're like, if I could go back and see my dad, I'd kill him.
Wow.
I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, if I could, I'd shoot every single one of my family members in the head. And it's like, come on, guys.
Mm-hmm. Just give them Flavor Aid.
So much less cleanup.
It is. Eventually, the bodies were transported by military cargo plane to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, a location that had been used previously for mass processing of the dead from the Tenerife airport disaster.
Maybe future episode.
The last shipment of bodies arrived early on the morning of November 27th, 1978. The base's mortuary was tasked with fingerprinting, identifying, and processing the bodies.
Woof.
The base's resources were over.
They had to take multiple trips. That's how, like, 900 bodies. If you do the math,
yeah.
not if they stack them up right, like
if they stack them up, like, bodies in there.
Oh, Tetris.
Yeah. Well, I've tried that in my truck, and then you take a turn, and then they all fall.
That's true.
then you go to open the door, and like a head falls off, and
right.
Quick, get the duct tape.
Staple gun.
Naturally, the base's resources were overwhelmed quickly, and numerous individuals tasked with moving or identifying the bodies suffered symptoms of PTSD.
Yeah.
Gee, mm-hmm. I wonder why.
Right?
In many cases, responsibility for the cremation of the remains was distributed to Dover area funeral homes.
How was work, honey? Oh boy. So many dead bodies.
Gonna need another bottle of Jack.
I'll tell you what.
Because I finished my first Jack pint on the way home from work.
Yeah. Plus, we had 3 call-ins.
Yeah, right. I had to pick up somebody else's dead bodies.
Yeah. Then I
had 3 loops
sent
of dead
back out. To pick up more dead bodies.
Now we know that.
Written up for forgetting to deliver an international
dead body.
International dead body. I messed in.
21 years.
21 years in, and get written up for it.
Of course, not every person that was involved with People's Temple had died in the mass suicide / murder, which made the situation all the more strenuous for the Guyanese government as well as the American embassy. They knew the bodies had to be removed, as well as the grounds needed to be searched for records pertaining to the People's Temple. There was a constant concern that there would be more to this event than just the one single night of death.
Now, we'll say, and I don't want to cut you off, because, but I think it's important. There was a traveling basketball team that one of Jones's.
That's literally my next paragraph.
Okay, sorry.
In that regard, they were right. Temple headquarters, the People's Temple representative and her three or four children had been killed or had been committed suicide, presumably by the People's Temple basketball team that was in Georgetown that day to face off against Georgetown's team.
But one of his sons was there and he was like stopping them from killing themselves.
Mm. And
must be the next sentence I was going to read.
No, because
coming down.
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that.
Basketball team.
They were terrible, by the way.
Oh, were they? They're the team.
Jim would be like,
they're the team that faced the Harlem Globetrotters, the Washington Generals.
Yep, basically.
Lost every time.
Yep, always.
No, they were bad because they're like, oh man, we're just so thirsty.
Is that Sweet Metal Arc Lemon? No, that's Sweet Flavor Aid.
They were malnourished basketball players. I can imagine. 5'2". Now, they did have an awesome band, though, in Jonestown, the Jonestown Express.
Yeah, they're into death metal.
Poppy tunes.
No, just some like good, like funky beats and a great female lead.
The Jonestown.
Jonestown Express. I would look on YouTube, not Spotify if I was.
Yeah, not on Spotify.
Oh, bummer. Now, there is conspiracy involved with all of this. It is.
Say what?
Because you would think it'd be pretty cut and dry from what we've told you so far, but there is conspiracy. Mm-hmm. The most far out thing to come that. From this was developed was a series of newspaper articles out on the West Coast, picked up by some of the wire services, alleging that this is them.
Yeah, pretty funky.
I told you,
good bass.
Jim Jones is like, let me pop some amphetamines. I'm gonna have sex with this boy, Ben. And I got dick on my dick shit. Oop. Good night.
Sample this for some lo-fi hip hop. It's rather funky.
I dig it. Then I became a death metal band.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Anyways, yes.
Boy, that opening act is stiff.
No, they're kind of lifeless.
Yeah. No, there's, I wasn't into it.
There's no life behind those eyes. there was
a vodka and flavor aid, please.
There's conspiracy that this was all a CIA operation. That Jonestown had been used by the CIA to experiment with mind control drugs.
People in the CIA are like, we can do that? No, we can't. Oh, well, they think we can.
And that Dwyer, the guy that we got all this information from, was their man on the scene, and that after he had been all that after the airport incident happened,
the airport
incident. Ooh, yeah. He himself had gone back to Jonestown somehow and cleaned up everything and hidden all the records. In part, this came from the admin assistant of Congressman Ryan, who, just judging by the news reports, had just gone off the deep end. And part of it was due to some young guy over in CIA.
My favorite Chinese soup.
Cream of some young guy.
Dwyer doesn't know who the person was that reportedly said this. But he thinks that it was just some young journalist trying to kind of get the scoop.
Mm-hmm.
The only person who was ever accused, though, of conspiracy and the murderers was Larry Layton. Larry Layton, of course, was the guy at the airport. He had been the one that the congressman was worried about. He was the one person and that had been warned about. He had been accused of shooting two people on the small airplane, and he was held for trial. The Guyanese government did not prosecute this case as well as they might have, seemingly on purpose. They just didn't want this guy in Guyana.
Mm-hmm. By the way, when that shooting happened, there were like Guyanese army people who were there who could have stopped it. Mm-hmm. And they were just literally like, oh, that's Americans. We don't get involved. Because it was just so like hands off
right.
at the time.
Like, I kind of get that.
Yeah.
I
mean, like,
not our problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. But Larry would.
What?
Larry was acquitted after an 18-month
detention in a Georgetown jail. So he
18 months? He was in detention.
Yes.
And then found innocent.
Well, then he was brought to the United States.
Okay.
He admitted that he had, in fact, shot these people, so there was no question about it. The Guyanese government had the decency of at least putting him in a direct flight to Miami, where he was arrested by the FBI. Layton was tried twice on four charges related to the shootings, including conspiracy to kill a congressman. He was released in 2002 after serving 18 years in prison.
Seems a little light.
It does. Today, if you were to visit the remains of Jonestown, it is unrecognizable, as dense vegetation has taken over the area, though you can still find the remains of what was left of a cult in which the members who were loving of one another, and mostly good people, they were sadly brainwashed and succumbed to the death of the influence of a maniac. The events at Jonestown is the greatest single loss of American civil and life, and a deliberate act until the incidences of September.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the survivors of Jonestown.
Hello, conspiracy therapy listeners. Are you subscribed to our Patreon yet? You're not? Well, for $5 extra a month, you can get an extra show a week. Pray tell, Larry, what would those shows be? Well, wouldn't you know it, I just happen to have a clip here for you to listen to.
I had a hard time getting through Jurassic Park 2 and 3, but that's probably because they were awful.
Yeah,
yeah, true. So,
God, don't true. Even get me started. No, let's not talk about it.
No, we have to, because it's one of my favorite rants that you go on. Is it in Jurassic Park 2? There's a scene where...
Okay, so Dr. Ian Malcolm, you know how he's the main character of the second movie, right?
The fly.
Yes, fly.
The fly.
Well, he has his daughter who does gymnastics and stuff, right?
Yes.
And so he brings her to the park with him, and towards three quarters of the movie, he's stuck in a building with a raptor, and this raptor is gonna fuck his ass up. And then this little fucking 12-year-old girl's like, I know what to do. Gymnastics. So she jumps on this pole, starts spinning, and she kicks this raptor that's like, what, maybe six times bigger than her?
I'm just saying, her foot hits his chin, and then her foot goes. She falls over and then gets eaten.
She is doing spins on a 2x4, which is square.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But she's
untreated wood, too, by the way, so there's splinter issues.
Wow. She's a master gymnast.
If she may have calluses on her hands. So I will let that slide, but it is a square.
No.
But she's still.
She's like 180 pounds.
80 pound girl should not be able to kick.
What, 250 pound raptor? 350 pound raptor?
At least.
Probably 350 with muscle mass.
500 pounds. I don't care.
That raptor takes a foot to the head and flies out of that fucking window.
That raptor worked for Vince McMahon.
Every time I see it, I get so mad.
That's the Dolph Ziggler of raptors, just overselling.
Yeah, that was a great kick to my chin there. Yeah.
So if you like what you hear, you can subscribe at patreon.com/BeerCityMediaPodcasts. That's patreon.com/BeerCityMediaPodcasts. Now on with the show.
Hey, Kool-Aid and frozen pizza. This a work of art, I ain't talking Mona Lisa. Dream of rocking crowds, see me filling up arenas. This weed got me laughing like a damn hyena. Yeah, I live a life pretty similar to yours. Used to go to school, hang with friends and play sports. Every single summer taking trips to the shore. And that was all gravy, but I knew I wanted more. Ain't ever seen a young rapper like one. Can't believe they asked, swear it's just a mirage. Still got my training wheels in the garage. But I ain't gonna need those, I'ma go hard. So far, I've done pretty well for myself. Couple trophies on the shelf, so what else could I want that I don't have yet? Well, a little more cash in my own fast jet, so I...
Back in segment time. Anywhere. Back in the Shoop Kitchen studio, closing it out on a two-parter. With this last little segment where I want to get real with it, really just kind of delve into what it was like to be a survivor. So... there was an article by The Atlantic. It's called The Survivors of Jonestown, courtesy of Jenny Rothberg Gritz, from November 18th, 2011. And she says, On November 18th, 1978, Jim Jones and more than 900 members of the People's Temple committed mass suicide. Some would consider that mass murder also, by the way. In the jungles of Guyana. Since that time, the event has occupied a grotesque but fringy place in American history. Jones's followers are imagined as wide-eyed innocents swallowing his outrageous teachings along with his cyanide-laced Kool-Aid. Flavor Aid, damn it. Now enter our survivor, Terry Buford O'Shea, who remembers things quite differently. O'Shea was 19 years old when she joined the People's Temple in Redwood Valley, California in what was 1971. And O'Shea was homeless when a man pulled up alongside her in a van. He told her about the community where he lived, a place, he said, where no one had to worry about food or housing. The leader was a visionary who was building a new future. O'Shea gladly took the ride. After all, she assumed if she didn't like the People's Temple, she could always leave. 40 years later, O'Shea is just beginning to speak openly about her 7 years with Jim Jones, first in California and then at his compound in Guyana. Her memories of Jonestown are complex. Its inhabitants, she says, were warm people who worked hard to build a utopian community. Jones himself was passionately committed to civil rights. During the 60s, he helped integrate churches, hospitals, restaurants, and movie theaters, and he personally adopted several children of color. His only biological child, Stefan, had the middle name Gandhi. Now, O'Shea, who escaped just 3 weeks before the massacre, recently published a collection of poems and photographs called Jonestown Lullaby. This lady, Jenny, spoke to her this morning about her memories of Jim Jones, including the mass suicide rehearsals he called White Nights. She described her dawning realization that Jones is going to kill her. And she explained why Jonestown should be remembered not as an American curiosity, but a cautionary tale for everyday people. So what I'm about to go through here is an interview that kind of surmises the experiences and the trials and tribulations. So here we go. You say that you want people to remember the good parts of Jonestown. What were the good parts? What was good about Jonestown was not Jim Jones, it was the people he attracted. They came from every walk of life, from the very well-educated to the totally uneducated. Some had lots of money, some were living off of Social Security, and some didn't even have that. It could have been you, but it was me. How did Jones manage to lure all these people in, to the point where they would follow him anywhere? He was very charismatic and attracted people who were feeling vulnerable or disenfranchised. For whatever reason, most of them were African American, but there were also white people, Jewish, people of Mexican descent. There were religious Christians and communists. If you wanted religion, Jim Jones could give it to you. If you wanted socialism, he could give it to you. If you were looking for a father figure, he'd be your father. He always homed in on what you needed and managed to bring you in emotionally. I always looked at the temple as a utopian community that used religion to get where we were wanting to go. Other people look at it as Christ's way. There's a passage in the Bible where Jesus tells people to leave their families and follow him. Jim quoted that quite a lot. He said he was Gandhi, Buddha, Lenin. He said he was the coming back of anybody you ever wanted him to come back or ever wanted to come back. And we believed him. What was your impression of Jones when you first arrived at the temple? The first time I met him, I was convinced that he could read minds, cast spells, do all kinds of powerful things, both good and evil. I was afraid of him and stayed afraid of him for 7 years. We didn't know he was a drug addict. Drugs were not of the temple. We weren't supposed to do that kind of stuff. Aww. I learned after the massacre that he drugged people on the outpost there to keep them from trying to leave, to keep them from trying to dissent, to control them in different ways, all unbeknownst to the masses. Do you really think that he believed he was doing something good for the world? It's hard to know the mind of Jim Jones, she said. He was a very complex, confusing character. In some ways, he was a good guy. He was passionate about interracial integration. People's Temple built schools, built housing, built a health clinic, built a kitchen, cleared fields, harvested crops. His goal was to set up this utopian community where everything would be fair and equal. At the same time, he was very paranoid. He did not accept the fact that one person would leave him ever. He had us all sign papers, Jim called them compromises. They were blank sheets of paper or type sheets of paper that he'd cover up while he signed our name. He had something he could blackmail us all with. One guy tried to leave and Jim said he'd use his paper against him so he'd never see his children again. So he came back. The thing was, too, that Jim would not let children off the compound. So if you're going to leave, you were going to leave your child. There was no way of getting a child out of Jonestown. How did you figure out that you needed to escape? By the time I got to Guyana, I knew things were getting bad. You walked into the jungle there and saw a sign that said, "Welcome to the Jonestown Agricultural Project." Then you saw guards with guns. And there were the beatings. I remember mentioning that I was in the mood for bacon and someone told me, "Oh, don't talk that way. You'll get beat." I thought, oh my God, I can't even talk about food desires.
I'm fucked.
The worst beating I witnessed was when someone was accused of being a pedophile. Jim took hold of a rubber hose and proceeded in front of others to beat this man's private parts to the point where he was bleeding. I know pedophilia is horrible, but that was just cruel and totally abusive. There were a number of beatings like that. They were really bad. It was a combination of that and finding out little by little what was real and what wasn't. The turning point for me was in the jungle one day when one of the aluminum roofs slipped off one of the cottages and made this loud bang. Jim Jones went out of his skin. He was terrified, and I thought, wait a second. Why hasn't he been terrified all these other times when people were supposedly attacking us with guns? Now a tin roof falls off and he's scared? That's when I realized the guns weren't real. You've written a poem called "I Do Not Love You," in which you describe an incident where Jim Jones held you at gunpoint. Can you talk about that? He called me down to his cabin one day. He had designated me to be one of his partners, which was a dubious distinction. I had never ever told him I loved him because I didn't. I was afraid of him. He held a gun in my head and said, "Tell me you love me." I thought I could tell him what he wants to hear. On the other hand, he's paranoid, so maybe I should tell him the truth. It was a flip of the quarter. I said, "I don't love you." And he accepted it. You never knew from one minute to the next how he'd react. He told me one time while he was close that we'd like to die while strangling me. He had hands around my neck. I thought, I hope this isn't the moment he finally cracks. From that point on, I minded my manners with Jim Jones. My mother was schizophrenic, and he started really reminding me of her. I was one of his many secretaries, and he had me writing all kinds of letters. Letters to people in the government, letters to people who had defected. When he started dictating those rambling 20-page letters, I realized they were the ramblings of a madman. I knew from my mother that the rational approach wasn't going to work with him. I needed to keep his trust in me and get out of the first opportunity that arrived. How did that chance finally come? There were a number of lawsuits going on in the U.S. calling on Jim Jones to come back. Jim's lawyer, Mark Lane, had come down to Guyana and told him there was a conspiracy against him. So Jim sent Mark back to the U.S. to handle the lawsuits, take care of it. I suggested that I go back with Mark and work as a secretary. I told them they shouldn't hire an outside secretary who couldn't be trusted, so Jim sent me back. I went to San Francisco and packed up my stuff and what little I had and said I was going to the dentist. Then I got on the next plane to New York. I changed my name to Kim Jackson for the longest time until the FBI finally found me. Now, what was your life like after the massacre? I was as shocked as anyone. I was 26 and I'd spent the past 7 years of my life with these people. They were beautiful and hardworking. I spent my life since working as a counselor for people with disabilities, both physical and emotional. I regret being in the temple, regret my role in it, but the only thing I can do for my redemption is to live my life and serve people as long as I can. We all wore both white hats and black, except Jim Jones. His hat was primarily black with maybe a little polka dot of white. And lastly, how do you feel when you hear people casually use the phrase, drink the Kool-Aid? It makes me shudder. I know it's part of the culture now, and I shouldn't be so sensitive to it, but Jonestown was an important part of American history, and it's been marginalized. We have to ask ourselves, why did a 918 people leave the country and go with Jim Jones to Guyana? It's a big question. Why did this group feel that rather live in the jungle than in San Francisco, Oakland, Atlanta, wherever they were living? There's a lot of disagreement over the word cult. How would you define it? A cult is when you aren't allowed to see your friend or family. I'm not talking about a retreat or 2 weeks at a spa. I'm talking about total isolation. Someone takes all your money and brings you to a place where there's no communication. Or if there isn't, you're not allowed to use it. Those are the lessons I took from Jonestown, and that's the message I think the American people should take from it. Trust your gut and don't give up your liberties. I was fortunate that I had an opportunity to escape, and I took it. Even then, I thought Jim Jones would find me and kill me. I had to get to the point where I didn't care if I died. I just wanted to have my own life, however short it might be. My goal, in fact, was that I wanted to live to be 30, so I could have a rich and full life. Now I have a daughter who's 29, and I'm 60. I've had double what I wished for. So, wow. I guess it's time for a verdict. In one corner, four podcasters you know and love and trust. We'll tell you what to put on a panini.
Bacon.
And also, if your squash is thick.
Mustard.
Tomatoes? Your eyebrow went down like, fuck
I'm
you.
Not a big I'm weird with tomatoes.
Especially on a hot sandwich.
Yeah.
I like tomatoes on a hot sandwich. Tomatoes on grilled cheese are delicious.
Tomatoes and pickles are the key ingredients, like the hard food.
Pickles, yes.
Peckles.
And then the other corner.
I said peckles.
We got a guy with sunglasses on preaching the Jim Jones word.
Oh, you betcha, yeah.
And he's not into God, he's into himself. And you know what? I'm not going to ask if this is a cult. I'm going to ask if you think you would have fallen for this at the time. I know some of these answers, but I'd be intrigued to hear the others. Do you think you would have fallen into this cult?
No.
Josh says no.
Okay. I think I...
Socialist, commune, integrated.
I think I would have been interested in the People's Temple, but as soon as it started leaning towards the move to Guyana, I don't know if I could have done the commune thing. Right, I probably would have been out the second they started talking commune.
I get it. Lawrence?
I mean, when they first mentioned the People's Temple, I'd be like, The Rock's going to be there? But once I found out The Rock wasn't going to be there, then I'm out.
Nice.
If you smell...
If I was a single guy and I was looking to just
get some poon,
I might join.
Poon pulls whatever it's called.
Then maybe I'll say this. I'll throw out a possibility. I would have joined.
Okay.
Nowadays, no. No, because I can't leave my girls.
Right.
I got a lot going on. I gotta go to work.
Oh, he's got a lot of going on.
Come I'm like on, an you. Alien.
Who did? Him or me?
You.
I do not sound like an alien.
Like, when you talked higher, like, I don't know if maybe he's like...
It's me.
Weird.
Luigi.
Look. This guy sucks.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the story, and that's been your verdict.
what's really crazy is there the stories of the people that survived the poisoning. Like there was people that ran out into the dense jungle
after they drank the poison.
And no, they were able to escape before drinking the poison. Like while other people were drinking, they were able to get. There was like a group of like three or four.
All you have to do is fake it. Like,
I just dumped it all over myself. I'm so clumsy.
It's like the person who doesn't drink and pretends to drink, and they're like, oh, I'm so poisoned.
Right over their shoulder.
My guts. Good.
That might be a fart. I think that's a fart.
I see the light. It's, look, I see Elvis.
Ouchies, I hurt and whatnot.
Yeah.
There was one woman, though. I immediately thought of my wife. Because it was this elderly woman who slept through it all.
I fell asleep halfway through the sermon.
That would have been me.
Boring sermon, I tell you what.
She was sleeping in her bed. Sermoning
all the time. I can understand somebody being like, I'm fucking tired, bro.
Right? I'm 87 and it's hot outside, so I find myself napping.
Yeah, she never heard the call to come to the pavilion, so she's like, I woke up and everyone was dead.
I don't know. I thought I would be the first to die at my advanced age. But now here I am at the airport picking up dead bodies.
Grandma 07?
Yes.
You survived Jonestown.
I survived Jonestown.
What are you going to do next?
Now I'm gonna go to Disneyland now that it's opened back up.
Actually, it's closed.
No, it's opening back up.
Is.
Yes.
Yeah. It is
this Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Put your fucking whole face in your palm. Because Florida. That's how you react to fucking Florida. Just shattered the most COVID cases in any state. Newest cases. Smashed the record. And Disney World's about to open up.
Yeah. Well, I heard crystal methamphetamine fed off COVID-19. And I ain't gonna wear no goddamn mask. It's just fake news.
Masks are for pussies.
I tell you what. I've been up to Tallahassee 17 times. Donated a zebra cake. Drove my go-kart and a couple of donuts. I never felt no COVID-19. They tell me things, and I'll tell you what. My mama once told me, she said, you know what, Terrence? You're going to drive your go-kart, you get your zebra case, you come home, make sure that I ain't falling asleep while I was cooking.
All that COVID is just the flu that ravages your kidneys, your lungs, and your heart.
Yeah, well, everybody knows you breathe out of your eyes.
Oh, you sound like my buddy Goofy.
Yeah, you sound like some sort of sissy boy.
The fucking COVID-19 I did.
Oh, boy. Oh, things seem to be going around here down at Disneyland, but please come on, show up. If
you better put on your mother fucking mask there, Mickey.
No, I couldn't do none of that. I got a lot of shows, got a lot of tap dancing doing, y'all. I'm going to be...
I don't even know how we got here.
No.
I got a little dizzy actually doing that accent.
I got lightheaded.
Oh, my God.
Just doing the voice for a little while and it doesn't do anything to your head. Hops and water and barley.
Yep.
Bibbly.
Well, that's an episode.
We do have a voicemail if you want. If you're interested.
Yes.
I'm interested.
I'm excited.
Nate?
No, it is not, but I will play it for you.
Voicemails.
Friends, Skylar here. I just need to call and say greetings from Wisconsin, first of all, and congratulations on 200 episodes. That is absolutely amazing. And if anybody deserves to reach this milestone, it is definitely you guys. It's just amazing to me how much the show has evolved and changed over, I think I started listening 3 years ago already. And then at the center, we still have, you know, these four amazing, hilarious people. And I am truly honored to call you guys my friends. And thank you so much for making the show and creating a community behind the show also. So thank you. So anyway, stay safe, eat some ranch, smoke some weed, and stay hydrated. Okay, bye-bye now.
Skylar, I'm ahead of you with the smoking of the marijuana.
I just drink a whole bottle of ranch, so
I ate a peanut butter sandwich today.
Thank you. I mean, the show has evolved, but us knuckle draggers haven't.
Yeah, not really. I like to think we might have gotten a little bit better.
I mean, podcasting wise, yeah.
As human timing beings, wise, I don't think we have shit. Any. I don't think we have any. I don't think we have any dead air when it comes to our shows anymore.
No, no. The only thing dead is the topics we talk about.
Right.
The only thing dead are the 900 people strapped into that Airbus.
Is our podcast.
Nothing better than the look in my eyes when Ryan says, "Do you want to do another podcast?"
I won't do it anymore. All right. Well, hey, I love you, Skylar. Thanks for that.
But yes,
we got a quick 5-star shout out.
Five star review.
This one coming from Eric Ledbetter, who recommends conspiracy therapy. Recommends conspiracy therapy and says these guys and gal are hilarious. I found it about 2 weeks ago and have been binge listening, knocking out 4 to 5 episodes
a day.
You're gonna
hurt yourself.
Before you know it, you're gonna be chugging ranch.
Yeah.
Yep.
And smoking weed. Shotgun and two-hearted.
Yeah.
Yep.
I got a video. I want to say hi to Mike Laird, who sent me a suggestion for a future episode, which I think will be great. And he also sent a video saying hello to the pod family with a two-hearted in his hand.
That was very nice.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Michael. But this is Eric's fucking shout out, so let's get back to that. So knocking out 4 to 5 episodes a day so I can get
not
more current stuff. Currently on episode 107 and going strong. He says, recommendation for a show, Beltway Sniper Attacks. I was stationed USMC.
That's the Washington, D.C., correct?
Yep. I think so.
I brought that up a couple times. The timing just hasn't been good, but I think we'll definitely get to that.
Yep.
Pretty soon.
Yeah.
I just added it to the official idea list.
Aluma Mommy, if you really want to know who the momager we have, go for the Aluma Mommy because she keeps everything in check. And here
someone
we
asked
are.
Him.
Thank you, Eric, and thank you for your 5-star shout out.
You know what's interesting is you can tell who's listened to the old episodes because they reference things that we haven't referenced in a long fucking time. And like we haven't talked about ranch, I think, in like at least 40 or 50 episodes.
You know, we evolved.
Yeah.
Well, Grandma 07 wasn't there during Hitler episode.
I wasn't. We had a tornado though, I understand, during that episode.
Very true.
Her services were needed elsewhere.
Yes, that's right.
I had to service my man.
I wish I had a Grandma 07. I
bet Granny 07 pulls some fucking hot dudes, though.
I do.
Like
I've had Zac Efron.
Oh, really?
I've had the guy who played the wolf in the Twilight.
Oh, Taylor Lautner?
I've had him, yes.
He's local, too.
Yes, he is.
Hudsonville, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, local I went to school my with vagina. Him.
That has its own zip code.
He's like a wolf on raw meat when he's down there on me.
Oh, Grandma 07, I love the
hi,
fact
Taylor.
That,
it's nice to hear you.
It's nice to see your roast beef slits drooping below your moo-moo.
You talk so dirty to me, you do,
yeah,
Taylor.
Well, things have been rough after the Twilight Saga.
What have you done after that? I mean, nothing. No, math, okay. Well, yeah, that explains why you couldn't get a boner.
That's true. Well, I was thinking that maybe I could get into one of them James Bond movies.
Yeah, there's no chance in hell. You have to be a little taller than that, I think.
All right. Well, can I just munch on your roast beef and then I'm out?
Absolutely. Yeah, going.
Going hard at the
Well, hey, that's been an episode.
Oh, dear Jesus.
Yep.
It's 11:12. Larry's got to go to bed, although he has the week off.
I might. Well, I've got to post the episode that I just edited. The part one of this.
Oh, wow.
I have to post tonight. It's good.
Nice.
Josh was funny.
Yes.
Josh doesn't remember recording
Josh doesn't
that.
Remember, which is why he was funny.
Right.
He had the smoky butthole that
he
night.
He did. He had a brownout.
Yep.
Brownout. Brown us out. This room
We were contaminated with your fart particles, sir.
Yes.
You know, I know this is like a visual thing for, and you guys, all the audience can't see this, but I feel compelled to say that I've been staring at Larry's shirt this entire evening, and it looks like a Pac-Man with like rabid blood stained teeth.
That's the Grand Rapids flag.
I know that, but the way
it does kind of look like.
Because the way that there was a fold, your shirt was folded.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see.
It looks like Pac-Man had been like munching down on dead children from Guyana.
Pac-Man. Gobble, 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 gobble. I'm eating ghosts. I make ghosts out of my friends by shooting them in the face first, and then I eat them after I eat a cherry. Cheney Pac-Man.
I almost feel compelled to take a picture.
This might be the dumbest character I've ever made. Yeah, Pac-Man, dumb. Dick Cheney.
Oh God, I'm living for Pac-Man, Dick Cheney. Oh God,
200 episodes. Woo!
Right. Oh my God.
What, you have something to say? No,
he just took a picture, I think, of the Pac-Man Dick Cheney shirt I'm wearing.
That way, he could post it in the episode. Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Does anybody have anything they'd like to throw out there before we end this bad bear?
A foot, I put my finger in my butt.
All
like
right.
Father like son.
Yeah. we're teaching kids how to live life properly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Aaron sounds so Midwestern there.
He does.
Oh, yeah.
She sounds like Bobby's mom from Bobby's World.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you know?
Don't you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you betcha, yeah.
All right, guys.
I put my finger in my butt.
We'll see you next week on another episode of the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast. Have a great one, guys.
This ain't Sinatra. This ain't the Carter. I am the chaperone nigga who brought ya. I am the author. This is holy water from the Holy Father. The Rock of Gibraltar. Step up to the altar. Step up to the slaughter. Get circumcised, son, and turn into a daughter. Niggas know they ought to drink the fucking Kool-Aid. Industry laid out. Authorities, they too late. MC's passed the due date. Niggas, they do hate. You are Bobby Boucher. I'm the man like Gucci. I rock the Louis, but not like Kanye. Niggas see me kinda like Harry Belafonte. Step into the room, they be like, day yo. Yeah, cause they know a nigga ain't Play-Doh. Shots all Fado. Is this Laredo? Border town, I knock them down just like Legos. Drink the Kool-Aid. I make a motherfucker drink the Kool-Aid.
Let him know.
Do you?
Let him know.
Do you?
Let him know.
Know who you fucking with. Know who you fucking with. Do you?
Let him know.
Do you?
Let him know.
Know who you fucking with. Know who you fucking with. Always.
Always.
Know who you fucking with. Know who you fucking with. Always.
Always.
Know who you fucking with. Know who you fucking with.
This has been a presentation of Beer City Media.